Welcome to The Creative Switch, the podcast inspiring the sensibly successful to switch on their unexpressed creativity for a more fulfilled life. Today, I'm chatting to Tiggs Rice, empowerment photographer and one of the UK's most inspirational and dynamic female entrepreneurs. She has an impressive biography full of accomplishments and accolades, but it is her generosity of spirit and her unapologetic determination to celebrate everyone as unique and special, which shine through everything she does. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. I hope you do too. And if you're looking to turn your creative inspiration into action, don't forget to listen right to the end of the episode and catch up with my creative adventures. This week, I look back on some of my favourite learnings from my guests and share a little glimpse into what I'll be up to after this, which is the final episode of the season. Before we get to that, do remember to head to my website, nickyvalance.com, and sign up to join the free Creative Switch community and get involved in the creative conversation. You can connect with like-minded creatives, find a safe space to share your challenges, support each other, and maybe even collaborate to make something new together. First, it's time for some creative news in The Edge. Did you know there was such a thing as Creative Brain Week? And that this year's event ran from the 4th to the 9th of March? The week was a convergence of world-leading neuroscientists, educationalists, health policymakers, artists and innovators, and celebrated the intersection of brain science and creativity, seeding new ideas across social development, technology, entrepreneurship, and well-being. The theme for this year's Creative Brain Week was attention, connection, and love. Christopher Bailey, the arts and health lead at the World Health Organization, visited for Creative Brain Week in 2023 and returned again this year. In the closing moments of Creative Brain Week 24, he reflected on how local experience connects with global issues. He plays a pivotal role in exploring the foundational science of why the arts may benefit physical, mental, and social well-being. Whilst the main in-person talks and workshops were based in Dublin at Trinity College, and online events during the week were available, there are also satellite events worldwide and exhibitions which extend beyond the week itself. It is a beacon within a larger annual initiative uniting artists, scientists, and thinkers, fostering dialogue and sparking innovation. One of the projects which caught my eye is the One in Six by 2030 exhibition. Aging populations are reshaping our world. By 2030, one in six people will be aged 60 or over. The One in Six by 2030 photography project humanizes this demographic shift, exploring aging and the richness of life's later chapters. And for anyone interested in learning more broadly about neuroscience, another exhibition called Hello Brain runs from March to December at the Francis Crick Institute in London, which unravels the complexities of our neural networks. From hallucinations to lab-grown neurons, it's an immersive journey. Feed your curiosity, explore brain-crafting activities, and marvel at the connections that shape you. I was very privileged to have a tour of the Institute earlier in the year, and I would encourage you to visit. I will definitely be heading back there to check out the exhibition soon. Head to the bottom of the show notes where all the links I've mentioned are listed under The Edge. Are you curious about where your creativity comes from? Or perhaps you've attended a photography exhibition recently which has inspired you? Do let me know, either in the Creative Switch community or on Instagram at Nikki_Valance. Before I introduce my wonderful guest, I want to mention a trigger warning as we touch on some difficult subjects within the episode relating to body dysmorphia and abuse. If this might cause you upset, please just skip to the last segment of the podcast. Otherwise, listen to my conversation with the remarkable entrepreneur who started life dreaming of becoming a scientist, only to accidentally become one of the world's most sought-after empowerment photographers, Tiggs Rice. Hello, Tiggs, and welcome to The Creative Switch. It's so lovely to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been really looking forward to this one. It's so lovely to be spending some time with you today.
I hope we're going to find out a lot more about each other, but we haven't really properly met. So it's my favourite way of talking to people because I think I don't want to come with any preconceptions and I want to learn all about you and the impact that you have on people and their lives. So before we go into lots of detail, which I'm sure we will do, would you be able to tell the listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, of course. So I'm Tiggs Rice. I'm based in Hertfordshire and I describe myself as an empowering portrait photographer. So I specialize in photos that help you become more visible, feel more confident in your body and show up, whether that's your personal or your professional life. I started in the world of burlesque photography way back in 2009. And I spent 10 years traveling the world documenting some of the best burlesque performers from around the world. And during that time, people started saying to me, I love what you do, but I'm not a performer. Could you photograph me? So during that time, I was getting into sort of more of like the boudoir style of photography that I do. And people then started saying to me, I really love what you're doing with your boudoir work, but I'd love to have my clothes on. And so the pinup side and sort of makeover side of what I do, like vintage makeovers, came about. And then around 2020, 2021, people started saying to me, I really love what you're doing, but I want that for my business. I want that level of empowerment for me to show up for my PR and lifestyle photos and my social media. And so the branding side sort of popped out as well. So for a long time, I had both the branding and the boudoir side and was keeping them separate. But honestly, you really can't split them these days. So empowerment photographer is the title that I'm running with.
I love the threads, how they all kind of mingle together and get you where you are. And I think that's actually true of most people who have maybe changed paths a few times, because everything you do now, even if it doesn't obviously look like it's going to make a difference to the final thing you might end up doing, it all leads there and it's all meant to be there as part of the journey. And I've got some weird and wonderful changes of direction I did, but they all give me something that helps me do what I do today. I think it's really easy to worry a lot about those decisions, but it's almost more important just to sort of intuitively make the decision. And then what's happened, I guess, is that your clients have almost prompted those, okay, well, maybe I'll put that and that together, you know, and it's actually the feedback you've had that's helped you decide which direction to take next.
100%. I think there's always been a really strong thread of empowerment through the work that I'm doing, and listening to my clients and how they want to be seen is so important in the work that I do. And it means a lot to me as well. So when a client says to me, I want to be seen in this specific way or in this specific light, like I want to honor that as much as I can on their journey. Mm-hmm. And as you say, there are little things that they might not have been the way that we've chosen them to be or the way that we expected them to go. But it's been an incredible journey and I wouldn't change a second of it, you know. And I think also bringing everything together rather than having them in two spaces is kind of honoring that path and saying, I do this and this, but I have to be true to myself. Both the branding and the boudoir side of things and the burlesque all live under one central person. So yeah.
I'll be completely honest with you, I have struggled until very recently with trying to sort of fit into the way things, I'm going to use air quotes here, should be done. And particularly from a marketing perspective, it's really easy to follow other people's tactics and say, oh, well, if they're doing that, then I should do that too. But actually, we're all really different. I'm still learning. I'm still learning how to express myself that it can all come together into one space, because I do have lots of different strings to my bow and I don't really want to give any of them up, but I equally I know I can't have one message because it's not one message, it's two or three different messages. And it's actually just learning how to do that authentically, I think, is the thing. That's the journey I'm on at the moment.
It's so important to recognize that as well, in that, especially people who are creative, our brains work in wonderful ways where we're inspired by this and we're inspired by that. And you say we have, and for a long time I had multiple messages. And actually, one of the things that was really, really poignant in my bringing it all together was my bestie, Penny. She does a lot of brand strategy work, and she sat me down. We were talking about logos and names and whatnot and how this was all going to come together. And she said to me, "Tids, you just have to accept that you are your brand. Like, it's you. You are the pinnacle. You can't hide behind a logo. People come to you because you're you." And as soon as that snapped into place, I'm like, oh yeah, like I'm the reason. It is me. That was the moment that it started all fitting into place, that there was one key thing that connected all of those messages and all of that branding. But still took me it took me over a decade to get there. So
And also just mentioning there that you said that you have the moment of realization, but then you've got to say, well, yeah, but how do I express that me-ness? Because we're all different layers and we have different aspects of us. Which one is the one that pulls it all together? So that must have taken a bit of work as well to sort of recognize it was the common thread was the empowerment.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that came from when I was working on website copy and social media strategies and things like that. And, you know, what are my key pillars? What are the things that I'm putting out there? What am I offering? What makes me different from everyone else? Like, there are so many photographers out there. There are a lot of boudoir photographers. There are a lot of personal branding photographers. We're literally coming down onto that very niche of what is the one thing that I bring to the table that will set me apart from everyone else. And having gone through a rebrand, I think I'm on my, I want to say it's my third or fourth logo. My last one was the teenage years, and I feel like we're now heading into the young adult years of the brand. And going through that and writing down and having to go through those questions that we've probably done several times in our careers and saying, you know, like, what are our brand pillars and what is our USP? What's your elevator pitch? But when you come to a rebrand and sitting down and going, okay, well, where does this actually sit? Let's look at the one I wrote a month ago, a year ago, 6 years ago. What are the common themes that are running through this? Because they might have changed, or maybe there's one key thing that's stuck with you since the very beginning. Yeah, it was so insightful. As soon as I realized, oh, I'm an empowerment photographer, well, there you go. That's it. That's the thing that's been missing in my marketing strategy and my branding for so long. Like, that was the key word, even though it was in all of my text and everything, it was there. Just I didn't know that was the important word.
Wow, that description of what happened is exactly what happens in all creative journeys. You have to kind of accept that you don't have the answer sometimes, and that you're actually just exploring, and it's okay not to be at the end of that process and to be a little bit patient with it, because I know I'm definitely impatient and I want it all to be happening now. And it's like, no, because it's not fully formed yet. It's still evolving. It's still getting to that point where it has, and it's probably not the end either. It'll probably carry on evolving. So it's just a really good example of what goes on for creative people is that continual process of defining what you're about and what you're doing. Really, really interesting stuff. I want to just ask you a question that I ask everybody. What does creativity mean to you?
Freedom of expression, honestly. It's the being able to find what's inside you and be able to put that out into the world, whether that's visual, oral, however you feel creatively inspired, and be able to have that freedom to put that out into the world in the way that speaks to your truth. We're so privileged that we get to do that on a daily basis. So literally to be able to create the art in the way that I want to create that art and have it be seen. Obviously, it's a bit of a struggle these days with some of the work that I do in terms of like social media and content bans, and I have to be quite careful. So there's an element of freedom that isn't necessarily there, but having platforms like my own website and various other platforms out there that allow me to have that creative freedom and show the world the beauty that we see in other people. Yeah, it's a really interesting one. Creative freedom is just having the freedom to express yourself without boundaries.
Yes. And I guess that is something that your clients are looking for, even if they're on the surface aren't asking for that, because being able to present themselves in a way that feels right for them, but perhaps not knowing how to do that. I mean, they haven't got the skills that you've got, but you're helping them to discover what it is they want to say, and then you're helping them to say it through the work that you do with them. So, brilliant. Okay, so I have three types of guests on my show, as the people who've been listening will know. And if anyone's listening to this first, then I can recap that really easily. So there are people who have come on to the show who are creative, who have literally switched on their creativity, and they've maybe switched from a career that perhaps didn't allow them to be as creative as they wanted to be, and they've switched across to doing that and putting it front and center. Then there are the people who, I call them as the facilitators, but they could be coaches, they could be tutors, they could be teachers, it could be anybody who is helping a person unlock that creativity and develop it in some way. And then there are the people who I really want to learn from, because their work is in researching, understanding how creativity actually works, be that in practice or in the brain. And I'm just really curious about the whole thing. And the reason why the podcast isn't just one of those three things is because I'm genuinely wanting to learn from all of those people in all of those different ways. So, of course, when I'm asking people to come onto the podcast, it's quite nice to sort of say, what do you think you are? And I kind of force them to make a decision. And I have to say that I'm this, not that, or the other. But having answered the question when you said you were a creative switcher, which is the creative person who switched that on, you then said, but actually, I think I'm all three. So I want to explore that. I want to look at all those different aspects of you and talk a little bit more detail in those areas.
So interesting trying to break that down. I can't actually pick one of these. I mean, I've always been creative. I came out of uni, graduated in 2009, set up a self-employed illustrator originally. And then the photography came from that. So I've definitely always been creative in the work that I'm putting out there. But then I also do mentoring. So I work a lot with photographers very specifically. So I run styled shoot days for photographers where they can come along and facilitate setting up like locations, models, styling, hair and makeup. They can book one-to-ones and power hours with me where we can do things like portfolio reviews. I'm also an Adobe certified community expert. So I train people in how to use Photoshop and Lightroom and several of the other Adobe apps as well. And then I used to be a teacher for a very short period of time. I taught GCSE and A-level graphic design. And I worked in another role. I was also I think it's called SEND now, so special educational needs. And I supported one particular student through their, I think it was a BTEC in art and design. This was quite a while ago. And I write a lot about art. I did about 10 years worth of magazine articles for digital arts before, unfortunately, that one closed. So yeah, so there are literal parts of me that fit in all three boxes. And I don't know that I could pick a specific one.
No, it's a bit mean to ask you to do that. I think what I'm learning through talking to the people who come onto my to have conversations with me is that I think a lot of people perceive that if you're creative, you're doing that 100% of the time. And even if you were a photographer and you didn't do any mentoring or anything else, you're still not being a photographer 100% of the time, because there are so many different aspects to that. And there's the entrepreneurial aspect, there's the business aspect. So I think it's really interesting to hear that often people have multiple income streams, they use their skills in different ways, and fairly regularly, actually, creatives do also mentor or coach other people who are sort of coming up behind them to help them develop their skills and move on in their own craft. I've yet to find someone who is so busy doing one thing that they can't do the other as well. I don't know. Do you think if you had to choose, you would actually want to do just one of them? Or is it that you're getting something yourself from doing both sides of it?
I honestly don't think, as an artist, we're in such a privileged position to get to do what we do. And I also think it's really important. There's the phrase, a rising tide lifts all boats. And if we want the creative community to be constantly lifting and evolving and developing so that it stays beautifully diverse, inclusive, welcoming community that is supported and funded elsewhere, then we have to be constantly lifting the people who are coming up underneath us. We need to be supporting the people who are above us. Realistically, as much as we might want to be artists 100% of the time, I think it's our responsibility also to make sure that that community stays a thriving industry. And if we're not passing down our skills, whether that's to the people below us or to the people beside, and sharing that knowledge and support, then we're kind of doing creativity a bit of a disservice by not enabling others to be welcome in it. So
yeah.
I don't think that I would feel right being just the artist, because I'm constantly taking from the world to create my art, to put something back. In the same way with my knowledge, I should be doing the same, is how I've always felt. So yeah, it's always, the two are so blended with each other, well, three, that it would be impossible for one to exist without the other. So
yeah.
Actually, it's lovely that there are so many other people in your community that you've spoken to that also feel the same way.
Yeah. I'm just a little bit surprised, because I sort of came to the creativity through coaching. I trained as a coach. I had a coach, and then it unlocked something. I recognized I wasn't using my creativity, and then I set out to explore that, and it turned into, initially very quickly, wanting to write and publish a novel. And now I'm at that, what else does it mean? What else could I do? But I always thought, the only reason why I'm doing two is because I was initially doing the coaching thing, and I happened to have added the creativity in later. But actually, people who start with the creativity often add in the coaching and the mentoring later. So it's really fascinating that the two often go hand in hand. I wanted to ask you if you can think of a moment, and this might be a long way back in your education and in your school years, maybe, where you just thought, yeah, this is what I am. This is what I want to do. Oh, I am a creative person. I'm going to do this.
I think I had a backwards moment. I really wanted to be a scientist. I'd grown up sort of talking about wanting to be a vet and then a neurosurgeon and something in science. Got to college and I was doing A-levels in graphics, fine art, psychology and human biology. And I really wanted to be a forensic anthropologist. So like, if you've seen Bones, I basically wanted to be Bones. And I failed my psychology A-level. It meant that I would either have had to go back and resit the entire year, or I could move forward and do my foundation art degree at university. So it's like that year you have to do before you go and do the 3 years. And I was like, well, I'm going to move forward rather than moving backward. So I'm going to pursue the art. And it'd been such a big part of my life before that. I obviously had done it at GCSEs. I'd always loved art in classes. I used to do as much art as I could outside. My mum was very sort of supportive in terms of materials and crafting stuff that we had in the house as well. So there was always that option. Went and did my degree. Honestly, couldn't pick an art subject that I wanted either. So I picked illustration because I was like, oh, well, I mean, anything that's two-dimensional counts as an illustration, even photography, right? So yeah, I was doing that. And I don't know that it was ever really the real plan, but it turned out to be an excellent side path that ended up being the main path. So maybe I'm on the best side quest that life's ever thrown at me, but yeah, it definitely wasn't the plan.
Yeah, everyone comes to it differently. Mine was a very higgledy-piggledy path. I think my problem was I couldn't choose, like you, I liked too many things. I didn't want to have to be forced to make a decision about which one was more important. And then at some point you do have to make some kind of decision. And I went down the science path first. I got a chemistry degree.
We went opposite ways.
Yes, absolutely. So I realised after the end of my degree that I didn't want to be a scientist in a lab, a researcher, that kind of person, because I recognised there was part of me that was really interactive, you know, and really got on with people. I wanted to be out there and involved. Might be something to do with the timing as well, because when I finished my degree, there weren't that many other options to use it, other than I just ended up going into business and into accountancy because it was a good degree. But anyway, so I came at it from the other angle, but I had always had that creativity there. And I remember I mean, some of my teachers stopped talking to me because I didn't choose their subjects for A level.
Yeah, like, that happens.
I can't do everything, you know. Okay, so there's lots of different things you've done since. So you've got this wonderful career and you're able to express your creativity. You're able to help so many other people in so many different ways. But there's a few places and times and eras that you've been involved in that I want to know a little bit more about because I know nothing really about them. So talk to me about the burlesque world first, because I'm really curious to know how you got involved in that and what it's like to work within that arena and how it's changed over the years.
Yeah, so I kind of knew what burlesque was, but didn't necessarily know what it was called for a long time. I grew up in amateur dramatics, so I'd spent a lot of time either around the stage, on the stage, loved the entire concept of showgirls. And a few friends had been interested. So I think we'd gone to see a couple of shows. And then my first year of university, I ended up doing a project that took me to the Erotica Festival, which used to be held at Olympia. And Dita Von Teese was headlining. And it was the first time I'd ever seen burlesque at that level. And remembered thinking, oh, I'm such a magpie. And she was head to toe sponsored by Swarovski at the time. And it was just a no-brainer. I have to go. I have to be there. And by chance, after I graduated, I'd been putting my CV out into lots of places and getting my 10 rejection letters a day. And I ended up being asked to cover another photographer who was meant to be working one of the burlesque festivals. And I went along, walked into the room, and I remember just being, it was at Café de Paris, which was just the most beautiful. It's a listed building. It's modeled on the Titanic's double staircase in the ballroom. And everyone was dressed head to toe in sequins and dapper outfits. And I remember walking in and being welcomed into a group almost instantly and thinking, these are my people. This is where I belong. Managed to talk my way into photographing the whole of the rest of the week, the 5-6 day festival. And from there, started making contacts and got a couple of sort of residencies working at some of the London venues, photographing every week, making friends within the community. And I just honestly felt so included. And it was this incredible space where every body type, every gender, you know, no matter who you were, you could get up on that stage, take your clothes off and be celebrated. And that did so much for me at that time. And I was like, if I could bottle this up and turn this into something that I could give to other people, it would just be the best thing ever. So yeah, I spent 10 years traveling the world, photographing as many shows as possible, and had the fortune of meeting my publishers, Working Class Publishing, who are based in the US, who offered to do a book with me. So in 2019, I published Striptease, the 10-year celebration of the beautiful, diverse niche of burlesque that I had found myself in. And you're right, the industry had changed a lot. At the time that I was starting to get involved, burlesque was very much becoming a bigger thing. So there was the neo-burlesque revival that had happened, and then it hit the UK probably around sort of like 2010 to 2015. There was this huge resurgence in, especially in London, but all over the country. And I feel like it's sort of pulling back a little bit at the moment. Obviously, we've just had pretty much a 3-year lockdown pandemic. You know, hospitality suffered the worst out of that. So I feel like it's sort of building its way back up again, and it's still finding its feet after that time. But I was in the perfect place to be a part of that resurgence. And, you know, at the time, I think there were only about 5 of us working in the country that were sort of specializing in burlesque at that time. Obviously, that's expanded a lot since then. It was so niche, and it was wonderful to just be a part of something so special. And yeah, I still try and see shows as often as I can, especially with the way that things have been over the last couple of years, trying to support shows as they sort of find their feet again after a couple of really hard years.
I think I haven't seen enough of it. I've concluded about that conversation. I think I saw 1, maybe 2 shows. My mind was blown because it was, as you say, inclusivity, definitely. Almost like not in today's world of inclusivity where people kind of doing it as almost like a tick box thing, but just because genuinely people didn't give any credence to anything other than you're just who you are and you do what you do and it's fine. There was no judgment. It was brilliant. That kind of leads me on also to something you're involved in or have been involved in, which is called Underpinnings. So talk to me about Underpinnings.
Yeah, so the Underpinnings Museum. So Karolina Laskowska, she is a luxury lingerie designer. She used to be based in the UK. She's now over in Norway. I had the privilege of working with her a couple of times back before that project. And she had the most incredible collection of vintage lingerie. And when I say vintage, we're talking from the 1700s all the way through to modern day. And going around to her house after a shoot or something, she'd be like, do you want to see some of the new bits that they've got? And we'd look through the collection and, oh my God, this is incredible. And she said, oh, one day I'd love to create some kind of like online resource with this and do something with it. And she came up with this idea of the Underpinnings Museum, which is now in its current form, a completely free online resource where you can research historical lingerie, both men's and women's, throughout the last couple of centuries and just see how that has changed and how underwear and its relationship with the body and the kind of garments that we're wearing, fabrics, the shape of things like corsets have changed over time. So she originally got me in and said, would you be interested in photographing some bits for the Kickstarter to raise some funding to initially get the website up and running? And yeah, I think it's been 7 years now. I think we've just celebrated our 7th birthday of the museum. And there are absolutely thousands of pictures within this website. So it's theunderpinningsmuseum.com. And you can go on and literally just research. We've got patterns for various corsets and historical lingerie pieces, so you can have a go at making your own. We do exhibits. So there'll be an exhibition and you can get a catalogue that goes with that, or obviously you can just use the digital one. But we go through things like the importance of colour red in lingerie over history and lingerie for your hair and talking about hair bonnets and things like that, which obviously now are kind of making a resurgence as well. So there's some incredible, incredible pieces on there. It's well worth a delve if you've got a spare sort of 10 minutes ever.
Do you know what that's making me do? That's making me think, whoa, there's definitely a book there somewhere, like a historical novel. Someone who's doing research for a historical novel would definitely find that as a really useful resource. So you have so many things that you do, and obviously you've traveled a lot. So do you have a favourite place that you've been to, or a favourite culture from all the different places in the world that you've visited?
Yes, Japan. I am obsessed with Japan.
How long have you been obsessed with Japan?
I first went out there in 2019 on my honeymoon, but before that, Harajuku girls and the entire Harajuku culture is one of those things that it's always been in my research, in my art, and I did a lot of projects around college about sort of like Harajuku fashion, Lolitas and sort of Gothic Lolitas, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, then I went out in 2019 because it was our anniversary. We had a meal with some geisha. And honestly, it was like one of the best days of my life, getting to meet geisha and chatting with them. And not, I say chatting. At that point, I couldn't speak Japanese, but I had just enough so I could kind of understand roughly what the topic of conversation was. So I came back from there and decided to start Japanese lessons. So I've been learning Japanese now for 2.5 years, I think. I'm about to sit my exam, which is sort of roughly GCSE equivalent, I think. She says, I've literally got the books in front of me because I'm actually having to study. But yeah, I went out again at the end of last year. We were out over Christmas and New Year, and I got to photograph a geisha for the first time and have a sort of private photo shoot. And it's just, there's something about it, just everything, the food, the culture, the way that they are, the way that they speak, the theatre and the performing arts and kabuki. And yeah, I've fallen really hard. One day I would love to move out there and do some work out there for a while.
Mine isn't Japan. I have nothing against Japan, but I have a similar pull towards Italy. It's difficult to describe it. I don't necessarily believe or disbelieve in the afterlife or repeated lives or, you know, previous lives, that some people, you know, really truly believe that that is our existence, is that we come through in various different forms at various different times. I'm very open to what might be true. But there's something really odd about, I genuinely felt that it was a place that was home, even though I don't have a family from that part of the world. I have got a Latin blood in me. I suppose possibly some way back it was. But it's just, it's strange, isn't it?
But also, I'm going to throw this around as a question for you, because obviously Italy is a very passionate country. Yeah. Like, maybe it's passion that you're drawn to. Maybe that's where your soul is.
Yes. I saw a photograph. It's a passion flower. And this was years and years ago. It's like 20 years ago. And I was looking for sort of inspirational images and sort of words. And somebody found this picture of a passion flower. And it said, passion propels your dreams. And it's always been like there. It's not my main mantra, but it's definitely true that if you can find out what that is, that's the starting place. And then just keep pursuing that and something will happen. That's one of the ways I do things. And I think as I've got older, I found it easier to have that creative freedom that you're talking about, which I think I totally agree with you. It's a big part of creativity for me, is not doing it the way people think it should be done, but just doing it the way you feel is right, which mm-hmm. might be different from everybody else, but it's right for you. And trying to perhaps listen to, rather than constructs and structures, which are all important for business particularly, but rather than being so heavily reliant on that, to actually allow myself to listen to my intuition and go, this feels right. I don't quite know why it does, but it's just going to be that way because of the way I feel.
Gut always knows.
Yeah, yeah. Which sort of comes a bit back round to the things I want to ask you about what happens for your clients. So your empowerment theme is going through everything you do, and clients kept coming to you and saying, well, you do that for them, but can you do this? Because they saw what happened when people had worked with you and they saw the output of that. And a lot of that is about body confidence. Ultimately, body confidence is normally a sign, if somebody is underconfident, of a whole load of self-doubt, not just about the body, but about all the things that are going on inside them. So what are the main things that people report to you that they've been carrying with them that get released when they've had the opportunity to work with you and portray themselves they want to be seen?
It could literally be anything. I think the beauty of being human is that we all have similar yet varied upbringings and experiences. So much of the work that I do with my clients happens before the shoot even occurs. It will be in the conversations beforehand and curating a safe space for them to feel that they can bring their most vulnerable self and share as much as they want to. So I feel like this is the trigger warning section of the podcast. Yeah. But for some people, that could be extreme loss. It could be body dysmorphia, whether that's surgery, injury, abuse even. You know, there might be physical changes to the body that they're having to come to terms with, and it might be their way of reconnecting with their body or reclaiming their body as their own and having control over the way they are seen. Because especially, I mean, my clients aren't exclusively women, I shoot all genders, but a lot of women are coming to me saying, I want to control the narrative of how my body is seen and experienced. And it's sort of saying, okay, well, what's important to you? How do you want to be seen? How do you want to show up? How do you want to be visible? And how do you want to reclaim your energy and your physical form? So honestly, we get all sorts. And I think that's the most wonderful part of my job, is that I'm trusted with so many people's most vulnerable parts of themselves and get to help them shift some of that negative into a positive and reframe it or photograph it and show it in a more beautiful light so that they can potentially fall back in love with it too.
Yeah. There's definitely a self-belief thing. I've had two or three different photo shoots that are not related to branding. I've had a couple for work, but I think one guy was giving out mum and daughter day, and you could get one photo, but of course we came away with about 20 photos because you can never just take one.
No.
And yes, I've done a few of them. I think you carry this image in your head often about what people see you as, but they don't see you as the way you see yourself at all. Not least because mirrors flip your face and it's not what other people see at all. You see something different.
Yeah.
But yeah. And just having somebody else interpret you in a way that celebrates you is just, it's almost impossible to describe the feeling you get when you see something and you think, blimey, is that actually me? I don't believe that that's what I look like. Then that, of course, makes you question all the other limiting beliefs that you might have about yourself, you know, what you're good at and all that stuff. I mean, that's what I do with my writing clients who I'm coaching. They're believing lots of things that people have said to them in the past about their writing. And what they haven't recognized is that nobody starts off with a perfectly formed poem or book. All of those things go through iterative processes. And so the raw beginning is just that. It's just a raw beginning. It's, you don't have to criticize it and go, oh God, that's not going to pass muster. Of course it won't, because it's raw. So yeah, theirs is more, I guess, more in the head. They're carrying these things around. But the two things come together, don't they? The body and the mind, they're not separate things. They're one thing.
For sure. And I think I think there are a lot of people around us in life that want to project their truths onto us and make us believe that their truth is the real truth, not what we think, believe, perceive. And it's having that time to sit down and go, okay, well, what is my truth? Someone is telling me this, someone is telling me that. Those things make me feel negatively about my skills, my appearance, whatever. And going, okay, I'm gonna take this time to focus solely on what's here, what's my interior, what's my exterior, what my skills are, especially in case of writing, and just take a moment to celebrate everything that you are. Because actually, and I've got a beautiful friend who's writing a novel at the moment, and I mean, she's absolutely smashing it. And every time I read it, I'm just like, this is amazing, this is great. And she'll say, you know, I'm going to have to rewrite this a little bit more. I'm going to have to go back and revisit. And I'm reading it going, oh, I wish I even had like 10% of that. It's having the confidence, isn't it, to put that out there and be like, you're amazing.
Yeah. Well, it's a weird thing. I don't know whether this ever happens to you in your work, but one day you could read back something. You shouldn't do too much of that whilst you're writing, because otherwise you just spend all your time reading what you've already written and not writing anything else. But sometimes you read back because you kind of need to know where you got to in the story. So you read back, and one day you could read something and go, oh, that's quite good. Actually, I'm quite pleased with that. And then the next day or 2 days later, you could read the same passage and go, oh God, that's rubbish. No one's going to want to read that. And it's the same words. And it's all that's changed is the way you feel about yourself and the work on that particular day. Yeah. That's why they say don't ever edit anything straight away after you've written it, because you need to let it sit and you need to put it away and you need to come back to it fresh to really see it, you know, where it's good and where it stands and where it needs to be tweaked. So yeah, it's a really fascinating process that I don't think a lot of people who read a book would understand what goes into the formation of those words. But that's a whole other story and a whole other conversation. How can people find you? How can they follow your story and on what you're doing? Where do you spend most of your time?
Online, the best place to find me is if you go to tigsrice.com/welcome. You can find links to everywhere that I exist online. I'm most active either on my blog or TikTok or Instagram are kind of where I'm most active. But yeah, reach out to me wherever. I think I'm pretty much on every platform and I love hearing from people and I'd love to hear your stories too. So please do reach out if anything I've said has hit a light bulb moment for you today.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much for your time. I'm sure you'll come on another time because there's even more that we could talk about and explore. Maybe we can collaborate in some way because I'm in Hertfordshire too. So yeah, I think we should talk about what that might look like.
Thank Absolutely you. Should. I didn't realise you were so close.
Thank you so much for your time. It's been wonderful. And I look forward to following your journey even further down the line.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Take care. Such an inspirational conversation. And what lessons we can all learn from Tiggs in what can happen if you find your artistic voice and use it to help others find themselves. Now it's creative adventures time, and I promise to share my favourite learnings from my guests. It was very difficult to pick. I went through the 4 creative nuggets from each episode, and I've taken just 5 of those across all the episodes this season, which I think are the most useful or the most likely to get you inspired, get you moving, get you connecting with that creative passion of yours. The first is from Kevin Chesters. We were talking about what creativity is and how many people truly believe they are not creative because of the way the word has been conflated with all things artistic or cultural. Kevin said, when people say, I'm not creative, I say, ask yourself this question. Would you stand in front of your boss and say, I'm not original? Of course not. Everybody is creative. Creativity is a production of something new and original. Don't let your limiting beliefs hold you back. The second nugget is from Lorna Gibson, a self-taught animator, illustrator, and author, and the creator of Mr. Bear, a wonderful animation narrated by Stephen Fry on BBC iPlayer, which I would encourage you to go and find and watch. It is beautiful. It all started when she asked herself, what did she want to do with her creativity? She took away all the barriers in her head and asked herself the question, what if I had no one telling me what to do? What would I do? And out of that came her illustrative practice, and everything flowed from there. My third favourite is from Andrew Scheck. This is a very practical tip. Even as a professional artist, he still finds it hard sometimes to go and do the work. And it is hard work, having a creative practice. And he said, find ways of bringing your creativity higher up your list of priorities. Now, I know a lot of people do find it hard to find the time. But actually, it's very rarely about time. It's more often about looking at what's holding you back and finding a way of putting that to one side to give yourself the opportunity to explore your creativity. The next nugget is from actor Martin Spendlove. He had a nagging voice in his head, which throughout his life, pretty much, had been asking him whether he was doing what he should really be doing. It was the actor in him who kept on tugging at his elbow and saying, come on, you're going to pay attention to me. You need to be doing this. And he kept making excuses, as he calls them, for why he shouldn't do it. And then finally, one day, he asked himself that question again. Are you really doing what you should be doing? And on that occasion, the answer was no. And that was what sparked his first step on his professional acting journey. And the final one is from Mike Hall, who is also an artist. And when I asked him the question, what advice would you give to anyone who's thinking about exploring their unexpressed creativity? And he said, go trust your gut. Give it a go. What's the worst thing that can possibly happen? Isn't that great? So I would encourage you to take his advice and have a go. And let me know whether you've managed to pick up a creative passion that you've been yearning to act on. Come along and tell us in the Creative Switch community. I want to hear all about what you've been getting up to. Now, this is the final episode of season 2. Don't worry, there will be more, but I always set out to make sure the podcast didn't take over everything else because I have quite a few creative interests and I wanted to make sure that I had time for those. So I'll be taking a break from the podcast and it will be back in the autumn. In the meantime, I'm going to be editing the screenplay for my book Pivotal and I'm planning to enter it into a screenwriting award. I'll also be completing the first draft of my second novel, which is partway done, but I now need to finish. I'm very lucky to be going off to dance the tango overseas again, this time not to Argentina, but to Canada. And I'll be doing a bit of giving back. I'm going to be at the Hearts Book Festival again in May. There will be lots of fantastic authors there, and I'll be facilitating some of the author talks and hosting a writer's workshop. It's also my third year as a judge for the Page Turner Mentorship Award, where I'm offering a mentorship prize for one lucky winner to work with me on their part-finished novel. The deadline for the awards is May the 31st, so you've got plenty of time, but don't hang around. Get that application in. I will add links for both the festival and the awards in the show notes. And finally, I'm going to be starting a new online course. I won't tell you what it is yet, but I will be reporting back when I return for season 3. And if a podcast is a creative adventure you'd like to begin, check out the links for Alitu, my podcast recording and editing software, and Captivate, my podcast hosting software. I really couldn't do it without these great, easy-to-use tools. If you want to stay up to date between seasons, I will be sharing more in the Creative Switch community. I've already got most of my season 3 guests lined up for recording in a few months' time. So if you want to make sure you don't miss the start of the 3rd season, the best way to do that is to go to your preferred podcast platform and click on the follow button, whether that's on Apple or Spotify or elsewhere. If you click on the follow button, it will notify you as and when any new episodes come up. And then you can go straight to the episode and listen to it there. And as ever, do tell us about your experiences in the Creative Switch community. I'd love to hear about your creative adventures. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Creative Switch. If you enjoyed it, please leave a review over on podchaser.com. And if you've got any questions, please let me know on Instagram at Nikki_Valance. I am so grateful to everyone for listening and joining in with a creative conversation. I'd love to hear your feedback. And if you know anyone else who might find the podcast useful or inspiring, please do share the link with them. The more, the merrier. And remember, why survive when you can thrive?